Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning, everyone. This is Danny Nesvedarani, your host for this hour of Speak Up on March 17th, 2026. Hope you all are having a relatively dry and chill morning wherever you are, whether you're commuting to work right now, whether you're already at work, whether you're at home, regardless of where you are, hope you're staying safe and you're staying dry. Anyways, this hour of Speak Up is going to be a mix of talk and interviews that have been produced here at CJSF as well as elsewhere throughout Canada. Before we get into any of that, I just want to acknowledge that this broadcast, as well as all of our broadcasts here on CJSF, are on the unceded and ancestral lands of the Hoklamilam and Squamish-speaking peoples who have been on these lands since time immemorial. Now, to start off this hour, let's play some local music. This is from Vancouver band Bloom Effect. This one's titled Hide.
Silencio.
reporting from North Vancouver, BC. This is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. An exhibition that has been years in the making, acclaimed Sakwekum artist, curator, and scholar Tanya Willard's Photolithics is now open for the public at the Polygon Gallery in North Vancouver. The name Photolithics is a joining of ancient words for light and stone, which relates to Willard's art practice where the sun and the land often play a vital role. CJSF was invited for a tour of the exhibition, where we were able to walk through the gallery space with Tanya Willard, as well as the exhibit's curators, Monika Shevchek and Serena Steele. The politics and perspectives of photography are a big part of this exhibition, and one specific piece in the exhibition titled Only Available Light encapsulates a significant part of Willard's work in which the settler lens that Indigenous people throughout Canada have been traditionally portrayed through, whether that be through photography or video, is critiqued. Photography is often considered a neutral method of representation. However, the portrayals of Indigenous peoples in Canada, as shown throughout the exhibition, has often been used as a tool of colonization. Here is Willard's explanation of this specific piece.
Another series of work in the exhibition Photolithics, through and through, are recent works that extend a practice and an inquiry that started when I made Only Available Light. That was a long process of me thinking through my Master's of Fine Arts, in which I was looking at anthropometric data and sculptural busts made of Sequoia men in the late 1800s, and the anthropologist Harlan Smith and his role in filmmaking, with a particular film in the late 1920s called The Shuswap Indians of British Columbia. And this was a series of ethnographic films that Smith made of different Indigenous groups. And so one being my nation, Sequoia people. And The Shuswap Indians of British Columbia, I thought, was a really interesting piece because when it was made around 1927, or released, was the years it became mandatory to attend residential school for young Indigenous people. And at the same time, the audience for these films was at the Children's Museum in Ontario, in Ottawa. These films about us living in our traditional ways would be screened to an audience of non-Indigenous people who, you know, we're curious, we're engaged by our ways, and yet simultaneously that way of living was under attack by residential school systems and cultural genocide policies and assimilation. And so the contrast in that was so disturbing, and also my own, you know, intergenerational kind of experience with day school, residential schools. You know, I'm part of that history and how it affects us today, how it affects all of us. In that work, I wanted to think about healing. I wanted to think about the power of the camera and how it framed us ethnographically for that kind of othering, but also the ways we can take that back.
After the tour, we spoke with Tanya Willard about her process and what she hopes audiences consider when looking through the space that this exhibition has been placed in.
Do you ever think or like have concerns about the way your art is perceived by others that come into this space? You know, like if someone were to not read anything and just look at the photos, they may be like, oh, photography. But, you know, the way that you're speaking about, like, what were the conditions that these photos were taken in? What's the history behind them? Who gets to tell these stories? Who gets to represent indigeneity, especially at that time? I guess, how do you hope audiences, like, perceive this space and interact with it?
Yeah, it's absolutely imperfect, and not everybody is going to understand the complex histories, presents, and futures that I'm indicating. But I hope that that's also, the work is not only meant to be that, you know? It's also meant to reach out and to speak and it impacts me in my heart and my spirit. And so I'm thinking that at some point, if you're attuned, you might pick up on that. And, you know, when you release the work in this way, it has to speak for itself, and you have to be open to what other people will bring to it. And it might be inattention. It might be, you know, exactly, oh, that's an interesting photo, or it's not an interesting photo. But at a certain point, it's released, and it's in the world, and it's a piece of me in relation to people. And if it's an opportunity and an invitation to go deeper, and if you don't choose that invitation at this point, maybe you will at another point in your life, maybe you won't. You know, it's not everything for everyone. It is a reflection, a moment, a scattering, a refraction, a diffraction, a way of thinking, a way of me spending time with the land, my community, what is valuable to me. And so in the end, it's still great because I've still spent that time. I've still developed those practices. I still developed those tools and strategies, and they will help my community. They will help my family. And so I'm immensely grateful for that.
You know, we touched on it earlier, like how audiences may perceive the work, but if there is anything that someone who is interested in coming to this exhibition that you think they should maybe keep in mind when going through the space, what would that be?
I hope people think about, firstly, where we are, Esalahan, Squamish territories, how we have come to be here together, what are our responsibilities, but in a way of sharing beauty and joy, to say, what is our responsibilities because we love where we are? What are our responsibilities because this land, it grows us? You know, what are our opportunities to connect with our families, our histories, our cultures in reciprocity and relationship to this place or other places where we might visit? And what are our responsibilities to protect the right of individuals to do that?
Once again, that was our conversation with Tanya Willard, the artist behind Photolithics, now open at the Polygon Gallery in North Vancouver. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca. And we are back with Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. This is your host, Danny Nesvedarani, for the hour. And coming up next, we have another interview. This is from a interview podcast series that we've been hosting lately here at CJSF titled Les Rendez-vous de la Francophonie, which is a interview series that provides the opportunity to celebrate the richness of Francophone culture here throughout Canada. This next interview is with none other than Eloise Spilliers, who is the executive director of a BC-based Francophone organization, AFKO. In the interview, she speaks on the importance of being accent inclusive, among other things. But you're about to learn all about that right about now. So without further ado, here is this interview.
Le Rendez-vous de la Francophonie is back for 2026. My name is Catherine Fisher, and I interviewed 8 Canadians for the Franco podcast. In this episode, I spoke with Eloise Spilliers, the executive director of the Association Francophone de Kootenay-Ouest, or AFKO. Eloise is from Belgium and now lives in the West Kootenay region of British Columbia. Eloise spoke about the importance of being accent inclusive, some upcoming Rendez-vous de la Francophonie events in Nelson, and the many local programs that AFKO offers Francophones and Francophiles in the rural region of the West Kootenays. Here is our conversation. Eloise, you are the executive director of the Association des Francophone de Kootenay West in interior British Columbia. Can you tell us more about AFCO and what it offers local Francophones and Francophiles?
Okay, AFCO, so the West Kootenay Francophone Association, or as you said in French, l'Association des Francophones de Kootenays West, is a non-profit, also a charity organization. We're based in Nelson, and we are trying to promote French language and its culture by organizing social, cultural, art activities. And we're trying to reach every Francophone and Francophile. So Francophile are people who are learning French toward, like, across the whole territory of the Kootenays West, which goes from Revelstoke, Creston, Caslow, Nelson, Rosslyn, Trail, Castlegar. Those are kind of the main centers that we're trying. So it's just a very, really big area. So we're really trying to engage people, or make people engage with the French culture and the language, either through like our library. We have a big library here in our community center based on Baker Street. Then we also have like a radio show, Kootenay Club Radio. We have French conversational class. Yeah, so that those are kind of like our service based. We also have a group for activities aimed towards people age 50 years or plus that's very active, and we call Jeune de Coeur. And we try also to work with schools to promote and to like to create like a sense of community, and also develop the sense of identity for people who are, or their mother tongue is French. So just for like a quick context, in Nelson there is 12% of the population that speaks French, or that are, is able to have to sustain a conversation in French. In Rosslyn, it's 15. So it's actually a lot, big numbers for like outside of the big cities such as Vancouver or Kelowna. We also have, we try to organize Les Petits Matins, which is storytelling in French. We have one in Castlegar, we have one in Creston, and we're looking to see to do it also in Revelstoke. In Nelson, it's a bit on pause, on hold right now, but we're looking to find fundings and also where we can do it, because our community center cannot host everyone all the time. So yeah, that's mainly what we do. So like we have lots of events, lots of activities, workshop, art. We try to bring Francophone artists from out east to come also perform here in the Kootenays, because that's also important for us, for arts, to just be able to bring a bit of Francophony in like French language in everyday life.
As you mentioned, this is a pretty broad area. How do you manage that?
So we definitely have our strategic planning, but that we're hoping to have a pied-à-terre in French. Is it like a base that we can have in each main big center? So let's say Creston, Revelstoke, Caslow, Castlegar. So we are definitely working on it. It's definitely one of our biggest challenge, I will say, of AFCO. That's why we try to like encourage Les Petits Matins, which is an initiative for like 0 to 5 years old kids and their family, French speaking families, in other part of our area of interest, is the word I'm looking for. It's aimed towards 0 to 5 years old, but we really try to be like inclusive of everyone to come, and to try to make it like intergenerational also. So that's like one way we do it. We have a project coming that we're hoping to get funded through Heritage Canada to have more of like a traveling camps that we will do, we'll be able to offer to the community in the summer, in to join other Anglophone main events, such as, let's say, the Slocan Harmony Festival. We're trying to reach out. We used to have the Bibliobus, that was really, really popular. So just some volunteers of AFCO were touring the whole Kootenay West to provide book exchange. But that was a really good project, and sadly it had to stop. We do our best. We do our best to cover the whole area of interest. I don't have like a one sentence answer for this, but we really try to help the volunteers who are in those centers, for them to be able to empower the rest of the Francophone community to join their activities.
I remember seeing that you've sometimes have events in different places too. Like you might, have a sugar shack in one community or have a ski event in another community or something. So I guess that's another way to make sure that it's not just Nelson where your kind of base is that gets served.
Yeah, as you were saying, like we try to do our sugar shack at different spots. We have one in Salmo that we do, let's say it's our like main one, but this year we're looking to maybe do one in Revelstoke, and because as long as they have maple and the gear to do it, it's a very easy way to bring people in.
What does AFCO have planned for March for the RVF?
So for Le Rendezvous de la Francophonie, we're going to welcome Mehdi Cayenne, which is an artist. He's an artist from out east. He's born in Alger. And he will do some workshop at both Francophone schools, so Les Sentiers Alpins et l'École Secondaire de Nelson, about workshop to promote either his, to tell about his story, about how to... He's had a very like immigration parkour, also immigration story to tell, but because he's born in the Middle East, where some countries also speak French. And so he's going to talk a bit about that. He's going to talk about developing your artistic side through like storytelling, through spoken word, through intuitive writing. And so he's going to do that with the school through the funding of Passeport. And we are trying to organize an event, like a public event, for him to be here for the community beginning of March. We haven't set up the date yet, but it'll be on our website really, really soon. So that's one thing we do through Les Rendezvous de la Francophonie. But as I'm sure you know, March is the month of the Francophonie. So we have other events that we're trying to do on the other side of the Rendezvous de la Francophonie. We have our mini film festival, La Bobine, that we go do with the Capitol on March 3rd and March 23rd. We are trying to bring like curated, really artsy movie to the public, just to create a bridge between Anglophone and Francophone also through the art of cinema. So the 3rd will have Soleil et Camaref, and the 23rd will have Carnival. So we have that. And I forgot to mention, we're also hosting another viewing of a program from the ONF, so the National Office for Canadian Film, here at AFCO, also with the student of L'École Secondaire de Nelson. And we are going to show a program that's all about being engaged with the environment and how you can relate to the environment through an activism way. So that's what we have for Le Rendezvous de la Francophonie. We have, actually, I forgot to mention, we have two other events. We have a curling tournament that we do each year in Roslyn. That's really important for us to, as we mentioned before, to have one event in different communities. And that one is really for the community in Roslyn, because as I mentioned before, so there is quite a few people there speaking French, and we have one March 8th to celebrate Women's Rights International Day here at AFCO, where we have like a really busy program. March 8th, where we have Alexandra Pronovo, who's a really active member of a community who just went through breast cancer, who's going to talk about that. We also have like Justine Garot-Loyer de La Ruelle Bakery, who's going to talk about the entrepreneurship of as a woman in a minority setting speaking French, and we're going to do focaccia with her. And then we have another workshop with Véronique Trudel, who's going to do something called Le Cercle des Mamans here at AFCO in the morning. And it's like compassion and really like participative workshop to just for parents, for mom, to just come talk and hear about other mom's situation with their kids and how we can maybe help each other by just active listening and maybe say, did you think about this? Did you think about that? And so that's March 8th for Women's Rights International Day here at AFCO.
What languages do you speak, and how and why did you learn them?
So I speak French as my mother tongue. I speak English. I learned it through traveling. I live in the state for a year and a half during my studies after high school, and then I went back to study part of my master degree. And then yeah, just traveling through the state and New Zealand, Australia. I got very lucky as a teenager to be able to travel that, thanks to my parents. And I speak also Spanish that I learned through 2 years doing my university degree too, and then also traveling to South America. Actually, last year I was there, and I understand a bit of Dutch, sadly, because I wish I could speak more. Because so as you may know, in Belgium we speak both languages. We speak French in the south and Dutch. Flemish people call it also in the north, and then we also have a bit of a German part. My mom, actually, her mother tongue is Dutch, but it never made it through for me to be able to totally speak Dutch. But I understand it really well because half my family speaks Dutch.
And how did you end up in Nelson?
Yeah, well, I traveled in New Zealand for or just a bit before COVID and met someone from Quebec there, and we did 2 seasons at Mount Hutt in the South Island, and he really wanted to do a ski season also out west, sorry. And he said, "Do you want to come with me?" And then I arrived a couple years later and never came, never left, actually. So I arrived in Nelson, and then I never really lived anywhere else for the last 4 years, except traveling here and there or to visit back home in Europe. But yeah, so basically skiing brought me here, and then the community held me back.
The theme of the Rendezvous de la Francophonie this year is activate your Francophonie. How do you activate your Francophonie in everyday life?
For me, it's definitely a bit of awareness about making sure that everyone feels comfortable where they're at with their level, and just like creating a safe space and awareness also for like being accent inclusive. Like everyone, for us here at AFCO, and also as me personally, it's really to not pick on anyone's accent, because I know I have a French accent, and I like it, and it's part of my identity. And like Quebec or French from Quebec also has an accent, and either they speak French or either they speak English. So basically, as me, when I speak French too, I have my Belgian accent coming up. People say it's been mixing a bit with Quebec, but yeah. So really, just to make sure that like we understand that everyone accent is part of their identity, and that's kind of how I try to go around in the world about being a Francophone speaker, a French speaker. So yeah, it's very definitely create a safe space. It's my way to activate my Francophonie too, with my English speaker friends. My learners, French learners, or just my French Francophone friends that I have a lot around the Kootenays.
Thank you so much for making the time for me today and everything you've
Thank you.
helped
Yeah, thank you so
me.
much for thinking about AFCO, and I'm glad we could have this chat this morning.
That was my conversation with Héloïse Spéliels, the executive director of the Association Francophone de Kootenay West, or AFCO. This has been the RVF Franco Podcast 2026. Thanks for tuning in.